I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning, baseball fans, I guess. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Kalo the Costco Ho, Clutch Larson, P.W. McDonald, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Pashman, Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey. Good morning, everybody. Now, what did I miss, man? See, this is why I don't get to have this proximity high. I don't get to walk into a room full of men, all of them going, woo, yeah, about baseball.
It was opening day, baby.
I know, but I'm like, what I was doing?
What was that?
I was sitting at home being angry and paranoid about something for about 3 hours, and then I cleaned up my house. And then, did you watch the game?
I didn't watch the game.
You didn't watch it?
No.
Because we were sleeping, right?
Yeah.
All right, so what?
I actually listened to the game because I can't watch it on my cable service.
You listened to it on
the
radio?
Oh, that's right. They cut you out, didn't they?
Yeah, Cablevision.
They cut everybody out.
Cablevision cut off my
Cut off the Mets. The Mets. People who are jonesing for the Mets can't get them.
See, like, I wish to God that somebody had programmed me properly. That somebody like my father or my grandfather, somebody had programmed me properly to appreciate sports in the way that some people do, because it seems like a good release, a good time.
Oh, dude, you never went to a baseball game, a football game, nothing?
I'll be honest with you. My grandpa Jack, who loves sports, this guy could lay on a couch and watch any sport and know the rules and get excited about it. He could sit there and watch curling and know the rules and get excited about it. This is what the guy did. He sat all day on the couch watching sports, but he took me to one Mets game. I don't remember what game it was. I must have been about 7 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And they're dead. They're done.
Oh,
it's over.
Oh,
right?
Oh.
It's going through 8 endings, right? And he goes, you know what? The hell with it. Let's beat the traffic and we leave. We get in the car. We're driving back home and we turn on the radio. It's like, kapow! Like, the face is loaded. Yeah, we missed the whole damn game. And he was so disappointed. I mean, maybe that's what did it. Maybe that's what screwed my head up for life. I don't know. My personal baseball career ended in peewees.
Mine actually ended in Babe Ruth. Most people's end before they get out of high school. But I got to tell you, the Kalos team did lose. But the North Carolina Tar Heels won the National Basketball Championship, and that's significant for one reason. You talk about father and son.
Yeah.
The most valuable player of the tournament is a guy by the name of Sean May, who played for North Carolina. He's now on a national championship team. Almost 30 years ago, his dad was part of a national championship team. Scott May. He played for an undefeated team from Indiana in 1976.
Yeah.
So the father's got a national championship. The son's got. That very rarely happens in sports.
I think that my brain's dissolving. I think that something's going wrong. I think I have NutraSweet-induced dementia. I think I have aspartame poisoning. I quit all the Splenda. I'm off all that stuff.
Oh, you're off the Splenda.
No meat, no Splenda, no sugar, no nothing. Maybe that's what's going on. But I'll tell you, if I could just follow sports, I at least used to follow the careers of musicians. You know what I mean? I used to follow something.
And you don't do that now?
No, I don't do it. I don't do it. I'm scraping around. I don't know.
You know what was on last night?
What?
The Last Waltz. Something you were talking about just last
week. That's great. I mean, yeah. But see, then I sound like some old sort of late boomer dummy, sort of like, hi, Robbie Robertson. Like, Bob Dylan's the best, but I'm not really like that. I used to be very involved, and I don't know what's going on. Either my brain's going soft or I've got different priorities, This job takes a lot of work just doing the research. I mean, on weekends, maybe I'll go to a movie or two, but I don't seem to have the passion I used to about musicians, and that's just a mark of age.
Well, you're also doing a lot of big work. You're hosting a morning radio show. You have a lot of things.
I'm very busy.
You're important.
I'm a very busy, important guy talking about how I got no time to enjoy life anymore. I like food, though. Put a lot of energy into cooking.
Oh, yeah. Good.
And you apparently did a little of that last night.
Yeah.
True, Carol?
Yes. I was listening to my Met game and making some pasta with some meatballs and sausage.
It was a New York afternoon for Mr. Kip Lepresto. Making the sausages in Brooklyn.
It was great.
Yeah, I made my kale. I must eat carrots. And I cooked. I scalloped somebody.
Scallops? Seared? Fried?
Seared. Beautiful, beautiful fresh scallops I got. Dig this, man. Dig this. I go over to Marino Brothers Fish in Astoria, Queens. These are the guys, you know, I've been buying fish here for years. And these are the guys that I assumed, if they knew what I did, they would be like, there he is. There's the communist. You know it, right? You remember I was talking about that? So I finally tell them, you know, that, you know, when I'm on, what's going on, and you know, they knew it. They one of the kids I had working there listened at the beginning, but now the two guys, a couple of the brothers, they're listening, right?
Uh-oh.
So I walk in there yesterday, you know, I got the best comment you could get from a guy like that. He looks at me, goes, it's pretty good. that's pretty big. That's pretty excellent. Big coming from the guy who you know, who sells me the fish. You know,
and, man, a few words, obviously.
Right, well, no, he's he is
pretty good.
But you know, they're not going to go like, you know, oh my god. Yeah, but they like the show. And the one guy who listens to Michael Savage, the other guy, and I believe it's his brother. You know, he's like. He reluctantly told me, you know, that, you know, you're doing a good job. You're keeping the, you know, you're keeping it going. And he listens to Michael Savage all the time. But so he's, you know, I think he's partial to that side. But, you know, they're listening to our show and they're digging it.
That's
pretty
cool.
That's awesome. Pretty big. And now I just gave him a plug, so I'll be expecting a little free fish.
Uh-oh.
And now I got some free snapper coming. So, okay, so now, what day is it? It's Tuesday?
It's Tuesday.
See, this whole hour ahead thing has kind of screwed me up, because now it's sort of light when you go to bed. What a drag is that? It's really, I still see kids playing in the street, you know what I mean? I'm like, all right, I'm going to bed now, and then it's going to be dark now in the morning for a longer time. Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's how it works. I was, you know, my next door neighbor has a basketball net outside. I think it's 12-year-old. Plays until it gets dark.
So
I keep hearing ba-doom, and I'm trying to sleep.
Remember when you said, each resonating sound of the ball bouncing just reminding you, like, remember when you had a life, and you might be sitting on your porch watching me play ball a little bit, maybe throwing a couple around with me? No more. Good night, old man.
You know? Oh, by the way, before we go any further, let me say thank you again to the people from San Francisco that gave you the gifts.
Oh, the cable car.
The cable car thing. My daughter loves it. Yeah. Absolutely loves it.
They,
so thank you.
They actually wrote a letter and said that they were very excited to hear that we mentioned the gifts they gave us. And now I wish I could mention their name, but I don't have the letter in front of me.
I have it downstairs.
Could you explain? Do you know why that turns right there? You know that, right? That the reason that it's a cable car, you know, sort of situated horizontally on a round base, and it sort of turns around in a circle. That would be kind of weird, because why would a cable car spin around like that? And that's actually the switching.
Oh no, that's how they do it. They have these plates at the terminals at the base of each. Because I've watched them do it. Where
they spin it around by hand.
Yeah, they take it and spin it around by hand. You literally get off the thing. It's on a track, and it goes like around, and it's a very interesting thing to watch.
It is. It's like old school.
Yeah, real old school.
I don't think it doesn't happen anywhere else. So now that we've covered all the important things that we're going to be covering today, we're going to come back, and our vampire president is following around a new corpse. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mike Mills from REM, and you are listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio, coming to you this morning from New York City, here on the Eastern Seaboard, the headquarters of all that is creative and exciting in the world. How's that for arrogance?
There you go. Bunker in the sky.
Is that what it is? That's right. For bunker in the sky in Manhattan. But I'll tell you, dude, the Pope, the dead wizard, is laying in state in St. Peter's. And are they going to bury him? What do they do with him? Because, you know, I think it was in Gubbio in Italy, where you take a tram up to a church on top of a hill where they've got a full-on, you know, old dead wizard in his full garb with his hat and everything else, but he's almost skeletal. They're not afraid. The Catholics will leave the dead people right out in the church, you know, for years, for eons.
Well, you know, they did the same with Lenin. The Russians did that with Lenin. When he died, they left. I don't know how long ended up lying in state, but there is a question, I think, of where they're going to end up burying him. Many popes are buried underneath underneath St. Peter's Basilica. I don't know that that is where Pope John Paul II is, in fact, going to be buried. But this this ritual, I guess is for want of a better term, I've seen happen a couple times before. I saw it happen after Pope John the 23rd died in 1963, ironically enough, the same year that Kennedy was assassinated. And then, of course, it went to Pope Paul the VI, and then Pope John Paul, who only served that 1 month, in
right.
fact, died in 1978, and then Pope John Paul II. This is pretty much according to Hoyle, and any head of state that has a substantial Catholic population will be at this funeral on Friday.
And who's going to be leading the parade, Mr. Riley?
George W. Bush, he and the First Lady will be coming. There will be also three other people, I believe, as part of this delegation, but they have not yet been named. What's interesting about this is that George W. Bush is now trying to reconcile his last meeting with the Pope. I don't know if you remember, the Pope was lectured him about the war in Iraq the last time they met.
Said it was no good.
Yeah, that was when he got the Medal of Freedom back in 2004.
Boy, didn't he look uncomfortable there in St. Peter's. Didn't George Bush look like a hillbilly, you know, just sitting there next to the Pope? It's like, oh, my God, look at our classless diplomat, you know, sitting there, you know, in all this sort of the lap of Catholic luxury. I guess he is going to be buried under St. Peter's.
Okay.
I've been under St. Peter's. The Catholics love their dead people. I mean, they make the
they
biggest
revere
deal.
The dead.
Oh, my God, do they revere it? It's their biggest selling point. It's like, look what's left of them. The rest is in heaven. Come on. Get on board. But I guess actually Bush made a statement. Can we hear that about the Pope's passing?
In his native Poland, that witness launched a democratic revolution that swept Eastern Europe and changed the course of history. Throughout the West, John Paul's witness reminded us of our obligation to build a culture of life in which the strong protect the weak.
Unless they're killing them.
What culture
now,
is that?
Yeah, well, the thing about George Bush is that this is a guy can't go to one soldier's funeral in this country, but will, you know, just, you know, bend over backwards to glom onto any dead guy that'll help him look better in the polls. This is a big outreach to Catholics. No one could care less about the weak than George Bush and this administration, that's for sure. Just look at some of the legislation they passed, the bankruptcy legislation, the restricting victims' rights legislation. This is an administration that cares only for corporate entities and religious fanatics who are willing to overlook their own economic status in pursuit of, you know, what they think is a higher calling. But it's really just a brainwashing device to sort of bolster up crystal fascist zombie brigades in order to maintain power.
You know, they met three times, the Pope and George W. Bush, in 01, 02, and in 04.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was struck, as you were, Mark, by the look on President Bush's face as the Holy Father lectured him about the war in Iraq. Now, mind you, you know, there was a time in Catholic history when popes really didn't get involved much in wars. In point of fact, Pope Pius took a lot of heat for not speaking out about the murder of 6 million Jews during the Second World War.
Right.
One of the things that Pope John Paul II is given credit for is moving toward saying he opposed the war in Iraq and moving away from the death penalty, which is something else many popes have been silent about in the past.
What's interesting, too, is that even though this pope seemed to be a pretty popular pope as far as popes go, you know, he's got a very high approval rating. Apparently, a lot of American Catholics, would really like to see some changes within the Catholic religion. About two-thirds of the people polled in this poll, about 69%, said priests should be allowed to marry, and almost that many, 64%, said that they want women in the priesthood. Six in 10 Catholics supported each of these steps. Now, whether or not they're going to make this shift, I don't know. They certainly don't even pay much lip service to it. You know, you've got most, right now, Catholics are just jumping on the bandwagon in terms of trying to, you know, make a martyr out of Terry Schiavo. And apparently, listen to this, more than 4 in 5 Americans, okay, and that's about the same number of Catholics, said they want to see the next pope do more to address the problem of priests sexually abusing children. I think that, you know, maybe letting them get married might be a start, but obviously, you know, one of the great downsides of this pope's, you know, reign is that on his watch there was an epidemic, you know, pathological sickness in the American church in terms of how much, you know, this priest, you know, child abuse, you know, really took a toll on this church, and these guys let it go on. The amount of denial involved, and the amount of, you know, sort of moving, you know, priests around that were guilty of it, and they knew it, and the proportions of this thing were mind-blowing.
Well, they were mind-blowing, and that is the big downside of this pope's tenure, that he didn't do enough. He didn't act swiftly enough. He didn't act aggressively enough to speak to this problem. In many instances, the Vatican signed off on what turned out to be humongous cash settlements to deal with this. And I think people want, and certainly this poll says that American Catholics want more than just payoffs to deal with this, with this sexual abuse scandal. The dimensions of which, by the way, Mark, are not yet fully apparent, I don't think. But see, Catholics, and this is true of many, many people in many different religions, Catholics have a tendency to take from their religion that which works for them and to discard. For example, the whole idea of birth control.
Yeah.
Catholics practice birth control. If they didn't, the numbers of people buying condoms would be much, much lower than it is. The fact is,
and there'd be much, much more Catholics.
Yeah.
And there's already pretty many.
Yeah. So they take the part of the religion that they draw strength from, and at the same time say, well, okay, if there's a problem, the Holy Father says I can't use contraception, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to do it anyway.
Yeah.
People have a tendency to to do this in all religions. Catholics have a tendency, because they have this one head, the Pope, and when he speaks out about these different issues, they're reminded of it more frequently, perhaps, than other religions.
And I think also when Catholics transgress and practice birth control or whatever, as long as they can keep their transgressions within a reasonable range, they can once a week go and sort of get their slate clean.
The slate clean.
It actually, they're sinning on a regular basis, keeps them connected to the religion. So what a genius system that is. You know what I mean? You can always come in and give us a few bucks and tell us what you did and we'll let you go.
It's interesting because many other Christian churches have a confession, but not a specific priest penitent confession like the Catholics do.
Well, now there's a certain realm, certain factions of the evangelicals that are actually within this administration that not only are they sinners, but they're trying to literally get Manchurian candidate style Christians who are on the fringe, the maniac fringe of the Christian right, to shoot judges. And one of them happens to be a congressman and the other one a senator. I think we should talk about that when we come back, Riley.
And we should absolutely talk about it because it is dangerous.
It's scary stuff, man.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. There's a concerted effort on behalf of the GOP's, Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade legislative wing, vis-a-vis the bug-killing dwarf king, Tom DeLay, and his cronies, to sort of obfuscate the fact that they're corrupt and completely unethical and grasping at straws. They are trying to mobilize a marginalized, psychopathic wing of the evangelical base to kill judges. I mean, I read this statement by Senator John Cornyn of Texas, and I was disturbed, angered, and amazed at just how plain it is in terms of trying to, to get people to take action that is illegal and deadly. Let me quote Senator John Cornyn, quote, I don't know if there is a cause and effect connection, but we have seen some recent episodes of courthouse violence in this country, and I wonder whether there may be some connection between the perception in some quarters on some occasions where judges are making political decisions yet are unaccountable to the public, that it builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where some people engage in violence, certainly without any justification, but a concern that I have. end quote. In other words, hey, if there's any of you out there that are pent up, built up, and don't know what to do with that anger and are feeling, you know, confused and hostile and overly Christian to the point of fanaticism, maybe it's time to take action. Maybe it's time to mobilize. He's trying to activate Manchurian candidate-style Christians, and we know they're out there. They've shot doctors before, and these guys are so shameless that they're, you know, using examples of two cases in which, you know, judges or judges' families were shot that had nothing to do with what he was talking about. Zero. Nothing to do with changing rules from the judiciary or being activist judges. These were just bitter people that had nowhere else to go with their frustration and choose to kill people, which is heinous. And he's trying to aggravate those very same people who have political agendas, who have religious agendas, do fit their political agenda. It's horrifying. And now what is this meeting that they're having this week, Riley?
Well, the meeting that we talked about yesterday, confronting the judicial war on faith, will be taking place Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of Cornyn, by the way, first of all, he's insane. This kind of thing, the thing that he said, and by the way, he didn't just say this at a press conference. He said this on the floor of the United States Senate, and in my judgment, it is some of the wackiest stuff I've heard come out of the Senate since guys used to come up and defend segregation back in the day.
Right, and it's provoking. You know, even Tom DeLay, if I could quote Tom DeLay from last week in a statement he made to the press, quote, "The time will come for the men responsible for this to answer for their behavior," end quote, talking about the judiciary who made a constitutional decision, you know, based on how the law is supposed to work to, you know, give, you know, Terri Schiavo's husband the right to, you know, allow her to be disconnected from life support because, you know, she was, you know, in a state that was not going to recover, and it was a quality of life issue, and it should have been kept within the family in terms of who was legally, you know, in charge of guarding Terri Schiavo, or the legal guardian of Terri Schiavo. And this, even most of America, you know, seems to think that this, you know, should have been kept in the family, and it should not have enabled the Republican administration to over, you know, to transcend or to override states' rights, to override, you know, constitutional law, and get involved in people's lives like that.
Well, yeah, Cornyn, first of all, is a former Texas Supreme Court justice. How he got that gig, I'll never know.
He was an activist judge.
Yeah, he was an activist judge, and one wonders what would happen if he felt he was the target of a liberal. Would he think that's okay? But even worse than that, he wasn't even talking about Schiavo here. He was responding to the Supreme Court decision that said you can't execute people who were under 18 at the time they committed their crimes. In other words, what the rest of the world does, but what few nations still have capital punishment. But this confronting the judicial war on faith, Mark, is an extraordinary gathering. This is the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration, the JCCR. Now, they are talking in this upcoming conference about issues like the judicial assault on our Judeo-Christian heritage, abortion and other life issues, judicial nominations, the real Constitution. Of course, they have a banquet because they all do. The next day, they're going to be talking about the decline of faith and what to do about it. And the list of people they have include, for example, Dr. Alveda King, who is the niece of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But also Tom DeLay is going to be speaking. The former mayor of Boston, Massachusetts, Ray Flynn, who was also the former ambassador to the Vatican. Congressman Steve Shabbat, Tom Gipping from Orrin Hatch's office. I mean, these are some politically connected people. Howard Phillips from the Conservative Caucus, Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council. All these different people are coming together to line their ducks up in a row to proceed with a multi-leveled assault on what I consider to be America's freedoms. Basic American
right,
freedom.
So these are traitors. These are anti-American, anti-constitutional religious fanatics who want nothing more than to, you know, infuse Christianity into the judiciary. These people are mad because the judicial branch of our government is the only branch right now that is capable of protecting what American democracy is based on. It's the only branch capable of protecting the checks and balances that are made to, you know, put in place to protect democracy. They are completely, you know, pissed off and aggravated that they can't penetrate this branch because these are appointments, they're not elections. So they're seeking to impeach judges that believe in constitutional law so they can hijack the judiciary with judges that activist judges. You know,
mm-hmm.
that will you know, sponsor their, you know, their idea of Christian government. And in a statement made by Judge Stanley Birch, who was the last one to hear the Schiavo case, and this is a George H.W. Bush appointee, a conservative justice for most, you know, as far as that goes, in his opinion, in his final opinion on the Schiavo case, he wrote, quote, "A popular epithet directed by some members of society, including some members of Congress, toward the judiciary involves the denunciation of activist judges. Generally, the definition of an activist judge is one who decides the outcome of a controversy before him according to personal conviction, even one sincerely held, as opposed to the dictates of law. And ultimately, our Constitution in resolving the Schiavo controversy, it is my judgment that, despite sincere and altruistic motivation, the legislative and executive branches of our government have acted in a manner demonstrably at odds with our founding fathers' blueprint for the governance of a free people, our Constitution, where the courts were the courts to change the law, as the petitioners and Congress invite us to do, an activist judge criticism would be valid." So what he's saying is what the Republicans want, especially this fringe group of anti-American, anti-constitutional traitors led by Tom DeLay and the likes of this Senator John Cornyn of Texas, is they want to put in activist judges that are more sympathetic to their Christian ideology. They want to override states' rights and let the federal government be allowed to dictate people's lives on the basis of Christian morality. They are anti-constitutional, anti-American traitors and should be seen as such because, you know, these people are not only hypocrites, but it is clear in putting together this Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration. If you look at the list of people, the executive committee of this group, I mean, look at this, Riley. Jerry Falwell, Michael Ferris, who is a prominent supporter of the Christian conservative homeschooling movement. Okay, in 2001, Ferris was hired by the Bush campaign as a consultant, and he's responsible for arranging the fall 1999 meeting between top conservatives and candidate George W. Bush. You have this guy, Ron Luce, who's a regular on Focus on the Family radio broadcast. Dave Meyer, a former Stand Up and Be Counted, a nonprofit organization that informs people about where and how they can stand up for righteousness against immorality, whatever the hell that means. Frank Pavone, of course, the new
Terry Schiavo thing.
This is the new American Catholic Church's representative in terms of trying to get some credit back, retool the face of the Catholic Church after there was this horrendous epidemic of child molestation on behalf of priests. Now he, of course, wants to speak for the dead.
Well, you know, what we are seeing here is the mobilization. And by the way, don't think for a minute. You remember when we had that tape of Tom DeLay last week saying, in essence, or actually it was a quote from Morton Blackwell, who, mm-hmm. by the way, is going to be speaking at this same gathering, saying that we will be paying very close attention to those who don't stand up and attack those who attack Tom DeLay. Well, this is the first step in that. Bringing all of these people together, and you can bet, because DeLay is speaking at 1:15, I think, on Thursday. What this means is these are the people. These are going to be the shock troops. These are the people who are going to be mobilized to say, no, you're not going to touch Tom DeLay. They want to cloak all of this in religious dogma. But the fact of the matter is this is blatantly political. This is blatantly economic because some of these folks are also clamoring for faith-based money. This is wrapping and putting all the ducks up in a row. And this, you know what the saddest part of this is? George Bush doesn't care about any of these people. He really doesn't.
Well, that's it. But that's it. They're all these Christians are trying to mobilize are being exploited by their leaders and, you know, who want political power. And their leaders are trying to call upon the representatives that they put into office to honor their political agenda. And George Bush is, you know, busy, you know, out there trying to kiss up to the dead Pope, you know, and make himself look better for his legacy. But the interesting thing is that, you know, when we come back, we're going to play some sound that will, you know, pretty much show that they're trying to instigate, you know, marginalized, you know, whack job Christian fanatics to shoot judges. But also, there's plenty of people within the Republican side of things, including the vice president, who does not believe that these people are on the right course. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hey, want a t-shirt with me and Riley on it? Go to morningsedition.com to check out our full line of Morning Sedition merchandise. We'll be right back.
gentlemen.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition broadcast from the elevated bunker in America's Manhattan. There's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. These are good ones. One, it's spring. Walk outside and loudly announce to the neighborhood, I guess it's time to put up my solar panels. Two, insert feeding tube to save the congressional filibuster. Look, it's saying I want to live. Three, complain about yesterday's Pulitzer Prizes. Why didn't Jeff Gannon get one for best expose? Huh? Why not? Four, name change, Sin City to Spontaneous Behavioral Choices in the Absence of Moral Absolute City. Five, today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. You know why they're waiting to bury John Paul, right? They're harvesting his stem cells. Wake up, sheeple. We're about to be overrun by popes. That's right. Well, here, just to finish off our conversation that we were having before to sort of, you know, bolster the argument that, you know, some factions or some people or some, you know,
elements
of the right are trying to instigate, you know, Manchurian candidate style Christian fanatics to shoot judges. Let's hear a couple of sounds outside of the statement made by Senator Cornyn yesterday of Texas, you know, basically saying, hey, I know there's a lot of energy building up out there, a lot of stuff's building up, and, you know, it might be because of this judiciary. Here's a statement from the priest Frank Pavone, Reverend Frank Pavone. He was the Schindler family supporter and founder. He's the founder of Anti-Abortion Priests for Life. This is in response to the Schiavo passing.
This is not only a death with all the sadness that brings. This is a killing, and for that, we not only grieve that Terry has passed, but we grieve that our nation has allowed such an atrocity as this, and we pray that it will never happen again.
Reed, on a biblical level, how is a killing punished? Now, here we go. Randall Terry, of course, family spokesman for the Schindlers and founder of Operation Rescue.
But I promise you, if she dies, there is going to be hell to pay with the pro-life, pro-family, Republican people of various legislative levels, statewide and federal-wide.
What type of, that sounds like a threat. What type of...
It's not a threat. No, we're going to deal with it later. It's not a threat.
We're going to deal with it later. All right, now there was an attempt, you know, by the Michigan militia founder, Norm Olson, I believe is the gentleman's name, who tried to put together a coalition of militias from around the country, you know, to kidnap, you know, the still living Terry Schiavo and put her in a safe house. You know, see, there's a momentum building, and when a senator, an irresponsible anti-American traitor like John Cornyn says, quote, I don't know if there's a cause and effect connection, but we have seen some recent episodes of courthouse violence in this country, and I wonder whether there may be some connection between the perception in some quarters on some occasions where judges are making political decisions yet are unaccountable to the public, that it builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where some people engage in violence, certainly without any justification, but a concern I have. All right, so these people are so shameless and so treasonous as to suggest to American people that are clearly psychologically, you know, compromised because of religious delusion to go out and shoot judges. This is what a senator is doing, a Senator John Cornyn. This is what a congressman is doing, Tom DeLay. And this is what the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade operatives that are fronting for them are trying to do, instigate violence against judges by Americans to Americans. These people are anti-American.
Not only are they anti-American, they are trying to cow the judiciary into making rulings in line with their philosophical belief system.
So they're promoting activist judges.
Yes, they are.
And thank God for the Supreme Court, who is the only, they're the only sane branch of government right now, and thank God they're appointed.
Although I'm not so sure about Clarence Thomas, but go ahead.
Right, exactly. But the Supreme Court on Monday ruled that creditors may not seize individual retirement accounts when people file for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
All right, that's giving some protection at least, you know, after these new bankruptcy legislation that, you know, forces people to, you know, no longer can file personal bankruptcy in a way that, you know, would enable them to have some freedom, you know, and be able to rebuild their lives. You know, basically the new bankruptcy legislation, which passes today, is an attempt to prevent people from filing Chapter 7 bankruptcy, which gives people a clean slate, and make them file under Chapter 13, which requires continued payments to credit card companies. This is making the bankruptcy courts basically collection agencies for credit card companies, and God knows they need their money. Credit card companies, you know, in the Bush's plan, in this administration, it's like we cannot have, you know, these corporations, you know, compromised by, you know, people owing them money. We have to fight for the corporation's rights. In order to qualify now for Chapter 7, Americans would be forced to complete a costly and bureaucratic means test. Even after they complete the test, their status could be challenged, forcing expensive litigation that most debtors can't afford. Now, as you know, most bankruptcies come from what? From people
medical costs.
Medical costs or divorces or extreme situations. The number of people that file for bankruptcy is just because they're bastards and they're irresponsible and just, you know, they don't care and they just get themselves into debt, you know, is slim.
Oh, it's a very, very small number. When we spoke to Luther Gatling, who's a credit counselor of some repute, what did he say to us? He said, I have never seen anyone come smiling out of a bankruptcy.
Right, and that's why there are courts. Courts can deliberate this kind of stuff, but no longer after this legislation is passed today. Yet credit cards will go on indulging people, you know, teasing people, basically sending them free money in the mail so they can get them into debt and jack the interest up to 30-some-odd percent, which they're allowed to do now. It's completely within their rights as credit card companies to jack the money up. How can people, you know, it encourages people to, you know, maybe help themselves out when they're in times of trouble, but it encourages debt. We don't live in an ownership society. We live in a debt culture that is sort of, there's a malignant type of consumerism, you know, involved in, you know, in America and maintaining, you know, debt and getting people, you know, sort of, you know, I'd like to talk to the guy we're going to talk to coming up. This is Eric Desenhall, who is a sort of consumerism expert.
Yeah.
He's a media watcher, but also he's a smart guy. We've had him on before. I want to talk to him a little bit about the culture of debt, a little bit about American consumerism, how it's polluted our culture, and how does it compare to consumerism in Europe and in other countries? Because, you know, this our entire culture is built on it. Riley.
It is built on it,
point where, you know, people really don't have opinions anymore. Many people don't have a point of view. They just have, look at these glasses. How about these shoes? Yeah, look at these new pants. You know, look at my car. You know, well, what are you made out of? Did I mention the pants? You know, I mean, you know, there is a point where, you know, if you look at the consumer culture and polling culture, that I don't think anybody knows anything really anymore except what they might want to buy tomorrow.
Yeah. Now, you know, the bankruptcy bill is, I believe, coming up on the floor of the House shortly. And you know, it is really, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable what this group of people have been able to do. Stay with us. Eric Desenhall is with us when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
Good morning to you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you this morning? I wanted to say, in light of the conversation we had before the break, is that Dick Cheney is not, you know, this is a very strange thing. What they do is they release statements. They release statements that, you know, that contradict statements, and they do this all the time. But Dick Cheney, in response to Tom DeLay and the treasonous anti-American, anti-constitutional faction of the Republican Party, Dick says, quote, I may disagree with decisions made by judges in any one particular case, but I don't think there would be much support for the proposition that because a judge hands down a decision we don't like, that somehow we ought to go out. There's a reason why judges get lifetime appointments. So on some level, you know, he is, you know, you're coming to the defense of the judiciary, but the Republicans do this all the time. They release conflicting messages from within their own ranks to sort of cover their own butts and also to, you know, cancel each other out. So you never know what the hell they're thinking, who the hell's to blame, you know, who's going to take responsibility for anything. It's a very, you know, ridiculous way of running a government. Yet there's so many people that think that these guys are the administration of truth and justice when they can't even get on the same damn page to release a statement that has, you know, a singular message. It's cowardly.
Good cop, bad cop. That's what they're doing. They're saying, you know, Dick Cheney now has put himself in the position of looking like a flaming liberal about these things. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but who the hell, you know, who are they trying to get to talk if it's a good cop, bad cop thing, you know? I mean, it is, but I mean, it's like, it doesn't...
To their base, it's like, okay, well, he's down with, you know, he's a moderate. And then you've got the people on the far right.
That's interesting. So they're basically, this is part of their whole kind of, like, we're really the big tent,
yeah.
Not them.
Yeah.
Oh, liars, hypocrites. What a, yeah. What a smokescreen. Here's my, my therapist likes me to keep my dreams together. So this is my dream from last night, which I think will lead nicely into our guest. I'm waiting in this huge line at the Department of Motor Vehicles listening to my iPod, which I don't have yet, but in my dream I do. Coltrane, My Favorite Things, Sweet. Suddenly I hear the voice. Mark, it's the iPod. Damn it. Mark, you know who stands in line? Losers. Losers wait in long lines for the rest of their lives because their time is invaluable. Not like yours. I say, hey, shut up, man. I'm done listening to you. An old woman in a headscarf and a mustache turns around and glares at me. The iPod says, real people smell bad, don't they, Mark? Grandma Stinky here could use some perfume, like Truth by Calvin Klein, available at better department stores, and a Gillette Mach 3 razor to shave off that soup strainer, and maybe a diaper. How about some Huggies, shaped to fit for unbelievable leak protection? I'm starting to get hot and dizzy. Stop it! Stop it, I say! Mark, instead of standing here on the line with ugly, smelly people, you could be doing this at home, online. If you bought a new computer like the new PowerMac G5, engineered for the creative class, then you could renew your driver's license and download the new Mobi CD from iTunes. Tune out. I'm turning red and I'm sweating. No, stop, please, stop. Mark, you need a personal assistant, some hot young college graduate to pick up your dry cleaning, make dinner reservations, service you sexually, pay her $5 an hour and then call her late at night and order her to fetch you things, just to test her loyalty. You're special. You deserve it. By now I'm gasping. I can't breathe. I'm like, no. Mark, just push your way to the front of this line. None of these ugly, smelly people are really here. Tune out. At the moment before I black out, I shove the old woman in front of me as hard as I can, and it starts a domino effect of people crashing into each other all the way up the line. A very pissed off security guard grabs me and dumps me out on the sidewalk on my ass. When I come to, the iPod says, well done, Mark. Let's go to Ben and Jerry's. You deserve it. Tune out. I woke up and my bed was filled with Hotel, the new CD from Moby on V2 Records.
See? I almost bought that rascal yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
And you didn't?
I didn't.
Oh.
I listened to it and it wasn't, nothing jumped out.
I don't buy anything. You know, I'm sorry. I'm not. I'm a little more detached than I think I should be. But I don't want to play along. You know, Riley, we were having a conversation yesterday. Remember when things used to have integrity, authenticity, or maybe they didn't. Maybe it was a different time. But I seem to recall that when you bought a pair of Levi's, they'd last a couple years,
yeah.
And you wore them right down to the end. Now you can buy Levi's used. You can buy pre-peed Levi's. Some of them are sort of strangely colored. But there was a time where American made, I think, meant something, even if it was made in a factory, it was still handmade, and like, you know, Kohan shoes, I don't know where the hell they're made, but I remember at some point a few years ago, I guess what I'm saying is even the brands that are supposed to still have integrity are crap, and this has a lot to do with where they're made, it has to do with how they're made, but it also has to do with the way consumer culture or the way manufacturing operates now in this country. Planned obsolescence, which was invented, I think, in the 60s to get people to buy the same model car twice in a six-year period just because it's been updated, is now come down to sometimes 3 to 4 months that you need to update things almost constantly, and almost everything is disposable. As you were saying yesterday, you know, you bring in something into a VCR.
A VCR or a DVD player, and they tell you, it doesn't pay to fix it, buy another one.
Right, so now everything's disposable. Let's talk to our guest. He's president and CEO of Desenhall Resources. It's a, you know, a sort of a media watch organization. It's a pleasure to have him, Eric Desenhall. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So let's get to the bottom of, like, this is our culture is fueled by consumerism to the point where most people don't even know who they are.
Well, I think that a lot of the popular media are driven by status anxiety, the notion that somebody else has something that you should have. And so whether it's planned obsolescence, which is something I don't know much about, but even more so the idea of an envy-driven media. You watch a TV show, even though it's not on anymore, like Friends, and you say to yourself, geez, these young people in their 20s are living in New York City. The reality is you need a few million dollars a year to live like that. I'm not living like that. What am I doing wrong in my life? And I don't know whether you read Vanity Fair, but you get that same feeling. You go, my God, there's 30-year-old billionaires out there. I must be failing.
And then, but then there's the next thought, which is like, wow, can I get the box set of Friends? Because I think it's available, you know, from the first through the seventh season, and I can have all of that. You know, like it all feeds into the other thing. You know what I mean? There's not just, it seems to me, comparing yourself to other people or wanting to have what other people have, but you can actually have the thing that's making you compare yourself.
Well, you know, as Truman Capote once said, a party is not thrown for someone, it's thrown against someone. And the whole idea is, oh, my God, what if somebody else has something that I should have? I mean, a lot of the computer revolution was built on the notion that your competitor probably has the right computer while you idiot, still have the wrong one.
I have deep iPod envy. I'm consumed with iPod envy as we speak.
Are you medicated for that?
Well, I'm looking for a medicine, but I have to shop around for that.
Yeah, I do own an iPod. The problem is my generation has a hard time learning these things and feels very inferior to technology. But I think that the whole key to marketing nowadays is really has to do with what's cool. And even in America, marketing a nation, a lot of what you see is not marketing a theme as much as it is marketing a lifestyle that maybe you don't have for some reason that's a flaw in your life.
Eric Dezenhall, something struck me in the immediate aftermath of September 11th, and I believe it was the President of the United States who almost implied that Americans should get over September 11th by doing the patriotic thing, which was go out and shop. I was kind of shocked listening to this because it struck me that maybe we've become more of a consumer culture than most of us believe. How important is consumerism to the United States economy at this point?
Oh, I think the notion of buying things and the frantic, urgent nature of buying things is really quite epidemic. I mean, the thing is it gets back to a sketch Jerry Seinfeld once did of, boy, if Cindy Crawford is drinking a Pepsi and I could get a Pepsi, does that mean, hey, wait a minute, maybe I could meet Cindy Crawford? And so the whole key to it is not just do you need a given product, but what does that say about you that you have it, and what does it say about you if you have failed to attain it? What a loser could you be?
Right, but it hasn't become like, I mean, I understand the dynamics of screwing with people's heads and making them envy, but I mean, it seems that that consumerism and product promotion and having these things and sort of, you know, misinterpreting want for need has kind of polluted the culture to the point where, you know, people are almost incapable of engaging in in-depth conversation, of having real opinions, it just seems like it's more malignant than we're characterizing it. Can we address that when we come back?
Sure.
Okay, 16 past the hour, Air America Radio. Our guest is Eric Dezenhall.
You're listening to Morning Sedition, the highest-rated, most respected news show in America. On Air America Radio.
That's the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
On Morning Sedition. We're talking to media watcher Eric Dezenhall. He is the president and CEO of Dezenhall Resources. We're talking about consumerism. When we left before the break, I tend to believe, Eric, that people are in a kind of a weird sort of paralysis. They are in a media and advertising-induced paralysis and anxiety that looks and feels like boredom or exhaustion, but they are overwhelmed with consumer options and media to the point where they have no real thinking time. Do you believe that?
I think you're onto something. I think, though, that the key thing is to ask why and how. I think that the American dream used to be about prosperity. That shifted. It's now about celebrity. The benefit of it being about prosperity is whether you were a dentist in Pennsylvania or you owned a gas station in Utah, a lot of people were allowed to be prosperous. The problem is a lot of the media culture has shifted beyond consumerism to a celebrity orientation where we believe we not only have to have lots of stuff, but if we are not uniquely famous, that we have failed.
What about politics? I mean, it seemed that there was a tremendous amount of effect in the way, you know, they obviously, you know, a lot of money is put into propaganda, a lot of money is put into psychological research and group behavior, you know, and all of this stuff is not done to help people, but it's done to exploit people's desires and wants.
Well, it's done to win, and I think that what has been discovered is, whereas years ago, basic propaganda was instinct-driven, now you see a lot of it being driven by market research and by tapping into not what people say, but what people feel. And there is a huge difference between what people will say in an opinion research survey and what they will feel.
So they've figured out a way to go deeper and screw with us on a deeper level to the point where we can't even really assess or figure out why it's having an effect.
Well, the fact is I have a slightly different take. I think that you can only spin a public that wants to be spun. The idea that we are all marching like idiots against our will, you know, you tend to hear people attribute things to spin when they don't like who's winning. I mean, when people didn't like the fact that Clinton was getting away with Lewinsky, they said it was spin. When people said that Bush is getting away with a war on terror, that's spin. I'm not so sure everybody is being fooled. I think that what has become more skillful is the capacity to tap into existing prejudices.
Well, let me just say this, you know, in response to that, Eric, it seems to me that there is no context anymore. There is no barometer of either journalistic integrity or collective truth on a cultural level. Everything is fragmented through the media, so doesn't that serve the same purpose as keep making everybody an idiot and being led by these advertisings and not having a real sense of what is grounded and what isn't?
Well, I think that the area where you're right is there are no longer referees. I mean, there used to be sort of cultural referees that would start in the form of journalism that would come in and say, wait a minute, let's take a look what's happening here. Nowadays, journalism has basically become advocacy, where everybody shrieks at everybody about things that they already believe, and you either purchase that view because you already hold it or not.
Mm. Eric Desnoyer, let's talk about two consumer products that seem to be things that Americans want real bad. Mark already mentioned one, the iPod. The other is this new PSP, the PlayStation Portable, which seems to be jumping off of retailers' shelves as well. What do the popularity of these two electronic items say about Americans as consumers?
What it says is we like to escape into our own realities where we can be our own king, our own celebrity. What both of these things have in common is the capacity to create our own world. I mean, back in 1980 when the first Walkman came out, I mean, it occurred to me in college that it used to be that you were sitting around with a transistor radio and everybody would hear something. Now you can withdraw into your own world where you can be Jennifer Aniston or Brad Pitt or King.
Or God.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think that is obviously that there's a tremendous trend on a broad level to make people, you know, sort of isolate themselves through the illusion of choice.
Well, and I think that what so much of it becomes, back to the celebrity culture, is we all want to be players. It's not enough to be a part of something larger. We have to be the king of it. And
even if we're the only one that knows.
Yes, and if we delude ourselves into believing it.
Right.
But self-delusion can be comforting.
You don't got to tell me. I am actively self-delusional, but I do it without technology, oddly.
You're a gifted man.
Yeah, I'm doing it old school, Eric.
Eric, what is American consumerism? How does that play out in the world? I mean, in other words, you know, it seems like America is the vanguard of consumerism for
this. We are, basically because we're young. I mean, as one friend of mine said, when I asked why everything seems to move slower in Italy, he said, well, they've already been great. And the thing about Europe and other parts of the world is they've already had their empires. We're brand new. We're young. We're in a hurry. We're still out to prove what young, aggressive societies do, which is that we're the best, whereas in other places in the world, they've already had it. They're not as impressed as we are.
So you're saying that we just, you know, after the fall, we'll get wisdom.
Well, I think that's the way it happens. It happens when you're gone.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Eric Desenhall. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Well, that was interesting. Folks, you know, if you're listening out there, we're about to shift gears. Some of you know what the liberal confessional is. I certainly know I have to confess. So if you have a confession, that you, if you transgressed against the liberal ideology or agenda, get ready to call at 866-303-2270. I am going to confess my particular sins, you know, when we come back. That was pretty interesting. I like talking about that stuff, you know, because you can go anywhere with it.
Is consumerism a sin?
I think it might be.
I don't know. We'll find out whether any of our listeners are guilty of sinful consumption when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition.
Right now,
call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Coming up now, we've got the liberal confessional. Are you a white liberal who's had bad thoughts about black people? Are you an environmental liberal who tosses your garbage into the street? Well, we're here to save your liberal soul, so give us a call at the liberal confessional, 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. As I said, 866-303-2270, and now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
I've been feeling a little bad about making jokes about the Pope, Riley.
The jokes you made on the show?
I wish. I mean, I wish that was it. I wish it was just that time. I wish it was just that time I said, does the Pope in the woods, and does this photo of him taken by a bear help? No, I've been making fun of him for years on and off, and it's not just the Pope, Riley. I've taken hits at all religious leaders and their followers, and I don't think that's really what liberals, you know, say I'm supposed to do.
And just what is a good liberal supposed to do?
Well, I think they say we're supposed to work with people of faith rather than make fun of them by using things like reason and science as our excuse. According to them, that's how we lost a lot of votes in the last election. Liberals came across as anti-God even when they were just pro-thinking.
And how would you work with them to be more inclusive?
Well, I guess, I don't know, I'd smile gently and nod a lot when they talk about their various religious myths and fairy tales. I mean beliefs and tenets. Then I'd try to steer the conversation more to an area we could agree on.
Like what?
Well, that's just, yeah, probably nothing. I'd just sit here, you know, like smiling and nodding, and then there'd just be this huge gulf of silence between us. I mean, most of these people are, you know, sort of back-ass death cult lunatics. See, I did it again. I can't control it.
At least you're not making fun of them, Mark. You're just stating your opinion, which is what a lot of people tune in for. Our listeners wonder what train wreck thing you're going to say next.
Okay.
And besides, most times when people are spouting religion, they don't want back talk anyway. They just want your silent agreement.
Yeah, but I mean, that's why I'm
they
not going
to... They just want your silent agreement.
All right.
And I think I have a good idea for your penance.
All right, well, hit me, Brother Riley.
All right, well, Mark, you know, Passover's just around the corner, and I want you to visit your relatives and get into a sincere conversation with the oldest, crankiest, most virulent Zionist in the Marin clan. And I want you to sit and nod and smile politely through his entire diatribe about how Ariel Sharon is too liberal and everything Israel does is right. Then if you come back and start insulting religion after that, well, at that point, you've earned it.
Oh, God. That's a hard one. It's a good one, though. I just hope he doesn't bring up the settlements.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Okay, let's see. We're going to take a couple of calls here. All right. Marco in Rhode Island. How are you, Marco?
No, I think we got Don out in Iowa.
Oh, Don in Iowa. How are you, Don?
I'm doing good. I think I'm one of the first people to intentionally listen to this station right now as opposed to expecting the noise box and the tractor to be playing Kenny Chesney.
Oh, okay.
Well, thanks for listening, Don.
I listened online for a while, and this was the first show I wanted to hear.
Okay.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So what did you do,
what's your sin?
Well, I DJ karaoke for a living, and I got into the moment, and I started singing some jingoistic Toby Keith.
Wow. So you teach karaoke for a living?
No, I DJ.
Oh, I was going to say. So it's sort of part of your job to know most of the songs to get people started. Is that it?
Exactly.
Well, I think, Don, there's, you know, in order to pay for that sin properly, you're going to have to buy and listen to the 20th Century Masters, the Millennium Collection, the best of Toby Keith, at least 50 times. Okay?
No.
I'm sorry. Huh? It's the only way to really understand the kind of damage you're reaping on the world by encouraging this type of behavior, Don.
That's right.
Can I drink while I listen to it?
What?
Can I at least drink while I listen to it?
I don't know because, you know, that would take away, that would ease the penance. Yeah. I think that, you know, you might have to drink afterwards, but you're going to have to go through the whole thing sober.
All right, I can handle that.
All right, thanks,
all right,
Don.
Thanks a lot, man.
I think we helped another poor soul out there, Riley.
In Davenport, Iowa.
Yeah. Marco, listen, how are you in Rhode Island? What's up, buddy?
What's up, Marco?
Polo.
What's your sin? Polo. You in the pool?
No, not today. I'm recovering from a cold, but my sin is this. I just bought an SUV.
Oh, my God. We've heard this before. It's a horrible reality.
Yeah, it is.
Well, let me tell you. My old Corolla, 1988 Toyota Corolla, which still got 22 miles to the gallon and couldn't get out of its own way, carbureted yet, it's really seen its last. So I bought a Honda Element.
Oh, well, you know.
Oh, I know that. That's the boxy one, right?
Yes, it is. And everyone should know that the other car we had, we actually replaced two cars. The first car to go, which is the one I drove to work every day, was a Dodge Colt Vista. So now you know where my penchant for boxy cars comes from.
Oh, yeah.
But isn't that one's pretty good on gas, right? And it's not too horrible, isn't it?
It's not too horrible. I mean, it gets 21, 24. It's about as aerodynamic as a brick.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I saw one the other day, as a matter of fact. And I think, you know, there is a penance that has to be
done. That sounds like a great purchase, Marco.
But you know what, Marco? Have you taken it out and driven it around yet?
I'm in it right now.
You're in it right now.
This is my first tank full.
Oh, okay.
And the first car that we replaced was the Subaru Forester, which got better gas mileage.
Well, it sounds like you've bought some pretty, you know, reasonable cars before. And outside of just, you know, paying the penance of, you know, having to pay today's gas prices, I think that you might have to, I don't know, maybe, you know, line the interior with spikes. What do you say? So it's as dangerous to you as it is to everyone else. What do you think of that?
Ouch. Have you looked at the side crash results for these this car? It didn't do very well without the airbags.
Wow.
I got them. I did get the airbags, hoping that it would be an improvement. But spikes, that's interesting.
Yeah. That's my penance. You're going to have to take it to a custom shop and have the interior done with spikes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And also maybe some sound deadening, because my Honda dealer told me that those elements are really, really loud when you're on the road, you know, like you're doing at the speed limit or so. That,
hey, Mark.
Yeah?
Mark, I drove a Colt Vista.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I forgot. My mistake.
Thanks for listening,
hey,
Marco.
Before I go, about the consumerism, I lived in Singapore for 2 years.
Yeah.
They're a young country that's one quarter the size of Rhode Island. And if you think the U.S. has got something to prove with consumerism, live there for a couple of years. You are inundated with it.
All right. I'll make sure I live there soon. Thanks, Marco.
Thanks.
Singapore. I had no idea. But let's go. But it's nice that he was listening. And I've heard that, you know, because even like Tokyo too. Like just insane.
Yeah.
But let's not get off subject here. Chris in Texas, what's your sin, Chris?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
What's your sin, my friend?
That's my sins. There's a multitude of them, but the main one now is I've been using entirely too much plastic and too many prepackaged goods, which, as we all know, are extremely wasteful, generate toxic waste. And
wow. So you too much prepackaged goods, which are packaged in plastic, and too much plastic in general.
Yeah, all our water containers, which leach vinyl chloride into the water, people don't realize about that. And, you know, as we slowly poison ourselves, and not to mention the toxic waste just created in the manufacturing of plastic.
Oh, my God, you're bumming me out. I'm going to put a plastic bag over my head.
You guys need to listen to more Helen Caldicott. you're probably being a little bit poisoned by the right-wing media and just don't realize it.
Dude, I think you've just said part of your penance, which is actually to listen to more Helen Caldicott and get her box set and her books.
Absolutely.
And actually, next time I see her, because sometimes she does the Majority Report, I will actually, I will have her stop by your house and
that
personally make you feel guilty for the plastic you're using.
That would be great.
And I need, what?
Also, I'm about ready to switch over to Green Mountain Energy. I keep forgetting to do that. They use absolutely no nuclear energy in the production of power. So,
do they use anything? Can they use the plastic?
That's a really, really good question.
And I think you need to go to a Plastic Anonymous meeting because it sounds like you have a plastic problem.
Yeah. I do, but hey, at least I don't listen to Toby Keith.
Yeah. There you go.
That's
right. Some good things.
Thank you.
The guy that called in earlier, you probably might want to send him a Dixie Chick CD.
Okay.
There you go.
Just to cancel out the Toby Keith. Thank you. We're having cross penances here. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Have a good day.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
Wow.
I know a lot of people with the plastic problem. I try to be careful of the plastic, but you get into this habit where you get your groceries in plastic. Here in New York, I know now a lot of people do this because we have small apartments with small trash cans. Is you get your groceries in the plastic, so you can use the plastic bag for the garbage.
Yeah.
Right. And then apparently some of the plastics they use now are biodegradable. But I read something that he's right that there are these fluorocarbons and everything else. Oh, my God, and I'm drinking out of a styrofoam cup. Let's take one more here and see if we can help someone. Who's that? Steve, streaming in Toronto. How are you, Steve?
Hey, Steve.
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. What's your sin, my friend?
I bought an iPod.
Oh. Whoa.
It's a double thing for me because it's financial suicide. I'm a student. I have very little money, but I bought one anyway.
And now you're going to have very little time to go to school because you're going to be busy programming your iPod.
Yeah.
It takes a long time, and there's setbacks to it. I haven't figured out how to upload things.
Oh, wow. I have to work on a penance. Can you hold on for the break here, and we'll come back in a second, Steve? Because a lot of people, a lot of people don't think the iPod is the same because Apple's a good company, but clearly, it is helping sort of detach part of the culture from themselves and engaging with it. Am I right, Kalo? Hello? Can you hear me? Kalo, iPod guy, you listen to me? Could you pull the white headphones out of your head and shut off the confessional music so we can come back in a minute? It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition broadcast coming to you live right now from Manhattan in the elevated bunker here in New York City. We're on the phone with Steve, who has just confessed to us that he has bought an iPod, and that's his sin, and it's a loaded sin because he doesn't have any money. And he bought the iPod because he wanted to be part of the iPod revolution, part of the people that get to detach themselves and think of themselves as little kings in control of their oral domain. Well, your sin is vast and big in my world. And I think that how long ago did you buy it, Steve?
Christmas.
When? Christmas?
Christmas, a couple of months ago.
Okay, so what you need to do now is, I don't know if you have a handbook or instructions, but those need to be thrown away. You can no longer ask anybody, how to do new things with the iPod, and from here on out, you're on your own to figure out whatever needs to be done from there.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
And also, be sure that, oh, boy, what else can we, oh, yeah, you have to podcast our show now.
Yeah.
I tried doing that. I can't really quite figure it out. It's easy to do with CBC and other things. But,
wait, so, see,
all right,
well,
we'll give him a little dispensation so he can figure out how to podcast our show, yeah. But no other contact with humankind about how to use that machine.
Yeah, it's part of your penance. And anytime anybody says to you, hey, you can do this new thing with the iPod, you got to go, no, don't tell me. Just tell me what it is, and I'll have to figure it out on my own.
Yeah. Trial and error.
Is that all right?
Yeah, I get it.
All right, and also, you know, if you get fed up, send me your iPod. No, it's getting weirder now, isn't it?
Yeah. He's not sending any money back, so I hope you got your college tuition straight, okay?
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Rock on.
All right.
Yeah. The penance wasn't sinking in with Steve. He was like, all right.
He was listening to the iPod in the other ear or something. What's going on here?
I don't know if the penance was as deep as it should have been, you know, because I get mixed messages.
Well, I could have given him a really bad one.
What?
Go to a Mexican restaurant in Toronto and eat your fill.
Oh, you've had bad Mexican food in Toronto.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really bad Mexican food in Toronto. Like I would have had bad Canadian food in Mexico.
But you make an assumption that it's like endemic to Toronto.
This was supposed to be a really good Mexican restaurant in Toronto, and the food tasted like crap.
You know, if we're going to go ahead and follow this digression all the way through, I have to say that... I've had excellent Indian food in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that makes a difference. But for some reason, I had a great Indian buffet in Toronto. So now,
there's a huge Indian community over there.
Yeah, in Toronto, yeah.
That's what P.W. McDonald said?
I'm a big Indian food fan, and Mark was disappointed with the Mexican food in Toronto. But I can personally say that at least one restaurant that serves Indian food in Toronto, excellent. And I digress even more? Let's go ahead and let's really push it to the limit. I got a cashmere jacket, a Harris Tweed cashmere overcoat in Toronto for $12.
Uh-huh.
This thing is worth at least... $12. You know, it's really nice, though.
It's not obsolete already.
Watch this segue. You're not even going to see this coming. I'm sure I couldn't have gotten that coat in Kansas for $12.
And speaking of Kansas...
What is going on in Kansas, Riley?
You know, again, I don't know what people are doing with their time. This is just... it is beyond me. We got guys in Texas talking trash about, you know, killing judges. We got people in Kansas,
yeah,
who today will decide whether or not to approve a constitutional amendment prohibiting gay marriage. Now, gay marriage is already banned under Kansas law. So you might ask yourself, why are they voting for this?
Why are they voting for that?
Just in case some smart-ass activist judge decides to countermand Kansas law, I guess.
Okay, so you're saying that once they amend the Constitution, that's it, it's a done deal.
It's a done deal. And it would not be able to be challenged legally that way.
Is this the first state to do that?
No, actually, there are 17 states
have amended their constitutions.
Never mind laws on the books, which are bad enough, all right? To me, there is no distinction between a constitutional amendment and a law banning gay marriage. They're both wrong.
Yes.
Let's get real here. Let people live their lives. That's what conservatives supposedly do, you know, the triumph of the individual. Well, if an individual wants to be with another individual of the same sex, what business is it of the state of Kansas?
To deny them their civil rights or their individual freedoms. I mean, this is what this new faction, this anti-American, anti-constitutional, treasonous faction within the Republican Party is trying to do, is impose Christian, you know, ideals, not even ideals, Christian, it's a renegade Christian ideology, you know, onto everybody and put it into the judiciary. These are anti-constitutional people that are trying to usurp the judiciary branch of our government to consolidate power around the Christo-fascist zombie brigades.
I don't have maybe as harsh an opinion of our late pontiff as some people do, but I will continue to criticize his legacy about the issue of gay rights within the Roman Catholic Church. And I know that that's against church teaching and all the rest of that, but there have been other churches, the Episcopal Church, Universalist Unitarians, who have begun to recognize that gays have a central role to play in their church and that someone's sexual orientation does not preclude them being able to teach and expand Christian doctrine.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It should be able to to grow, to expand. It should be a living, breathing document. Christian principles should apply to all people.
Yes.
And I think that's absolutely true. But these people are dead set. You know, you have to understand, and I think a lot of you do, that the judiciary is the only branch of government that is maintaining and guaranteeing, you know, whatever fragments of democracy are left at this point in time, and this really aggravates these narrow-minded, moralizing fascists. I'm going to use that word because I know some liberals are sort of like, really, fascists? You know, that's.
Oh, don't call them that.
Yeah. It's not even because they're afraid; they just think it's so retro. But it is, sort of percolating in this country, and it's a real deal. I'd like to hear from some Christians. And don't be mad at me. I know there's some of you out there that are good folks and actually believe in Christian principles about, what is starting to look like a very anti-American, anti-constitutional group of traitors that are speaking on behalf of evangelical Christianity. The number is 866-303-2270. I'd like to hear some reactions from you, around this issue, not just gay marriage, but the idea that, Senator Cornyn from Texas is encouraging, Christian fanatics to shoot judges.
Yep. And coming up in the next hour as well, Will Eno and James Urbaniak are going to be joining us to talk about the play Tom Paine.
Great.
When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley over there.
Good morning.
We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. We're talking about the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade's attempt to, mobilize fanatical Christians to kill judges, and just the whole idea that this treasonous, anti-American, anti-constitutional faction within the Republican government, led by Tom DeLay and several different front organizations, are really trying to usurp the power of the judiciary branch of this government, which is horrendous and anti-American. And if I can read this quote from Senator John Cornyn, again from Texas, trying to instigate violence against the judiciary in this country, which I would say is treasonous. Here's a quote from Senator John Cornyn, a Republican of Texas, quote, "I don't know if there is a cause and effect connection, but we have seen some recent episodes of courthouse violence in this country, and I wonder whether there may be some connection between the perception in some quarters on some occasion where judges are making political decisions yet are unaccountable to the public, that it builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where some people engage in violence. Certainly without any justification, but a concern that I have," end quote. The two cases in recent weeks of, one judge killed, one judge's mother and husband killed, had nothing to do with political ideology. It had to do with resentment on behalf of sentences that they put out or didn't put out. But this guy is clearly politicizing that. And basically, in not so coded language, putting it out there to religious believers to the point, people who don't care about dying, to maybe take a judge out with them. This is an anti-American act. It is a treasonous act. It is a group of Republicans that are fueled by religious ideology to try to usurp the judiciary branch of this government. This is Senator John Cornyn and, of course, Congressman Tom DeLay. We're also talking about the gay marriage ban amendment to the Constitution in Kansas, and it looks like we've got Matt, who's in Kansas. Yeah, what's going on there on the ground, Matt?
Hey, Matt.
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing?
All right.
Well, I did my part last night. I tore down 32 vote yes signs.
Good for you.
Didn't get caught. Didn't get caught.
Out of people's yards or just on the street or in the town or?
All of the above.
Oh, good, yeah. Good.
You were busy, man.
I don't care.
Yeah, why not? If they're going to be that, that anti-American and deny people their civil rights, why not go out and take a little action?
Hey, the bottom line is, I'm not going to lie to you guys. When I've been around people that were gay, I'm not going to ever say that it never made me a little bit uncomfortable. But you know what? Get over it. This is America. They got the right. Everybody has the right to live the way that they want to live, as long as they're not causing anybody any harm. People need to get over it and get on with their lives and quit worrying about what anybody else is doing.
It's great to hear you say that, especially you know, from Kansas. Is there what is the do you find people are like minded?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been pretty happy with the number of letters that I've seen in local papers and so forth saying, hey, this is stupid. We need to vote against this. This is just, we're just sounding like a bunch of bigots. We need to get on. We need to get over it. You know, I've been pretty pleased. I really have. I'm afraid that it probably will pass.
Yeah.
But I am happy to hear the number of people speaking out against it that I have heard.
Well, we're happy to.
What? I did find out, though. Now, you guys probably won't approve of this, but I did find out that some of the Federalist Party does have this this caring about life. I was in a bar in Wichita the other night, and I was wearing my F the President shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And some guy spouted off about it, and I kind of let it go. And then he spouted off again, and finally he spouted off the third time. And I knocked him off his bar stool, and by golly, he did. He did show that he has the culture of life and that he really cared, because I told him to leave, and he did, you know. So
I hope you owned the bar there, Matt.
No, I didn't own the bar, but, you know.
You a bouncer there or something?
No, I was just a patron.
Was it a fair fight?
No, it wasn't fair at all.
There you go.
Hey, Matt. Off, I just knocked him off his bar stool.
Matt is taking the cause to the streets. Thanks for
there
calling,
There you go.
Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, see you guys.
All right, take it easy.
Wow.
That's great.
So much for what's the matter with Kansas. Nothing. They're all like Matt.
He's tearing down signs, popping people off their bar stools. That's a fighting Democrat for you.
There you go.
I like what he said was kind of interesting. It's like, I have to admit to you, I'm a little uncomfortable sometimes around gay people, but he's willing to acknowledge that it's just him. It's not homophobic. It's not hate.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm a little uncomfortable, but, you know, what the hell difference does that make?
Yeah,
exactly.
And see, that's the thing about some of the people that are promoting these kinds of constitutional amendments. They are nervous about gay people, but they don't know what to do about it, so they try and pass laws.
Well, they hate them.
I think they
honestly hate them. I think that at a level where you're starting to change legislation, you're no longer about human beings. You're no longer about that fella that sits across from you, or that woman who sits across from you at work, who you know is gay, and you've learned to like and work with, and you know, and share donuts with, or do whatever. You know, if you're secretly hating those people and promoting legislation, there's a fault to your character. I mean, if you can't just say, you know, hey, it ain't for me, and you know, I may not be comfortable with that lifestyle, but you know, she seems happy, or he seems happy, and it's not my business.
Yeah,
to interfere with that. If you can't do that, then you know you're really not pro-American. You know, you're really not about embracing the diversity and accepting people the way they are. You know, tolerance and acceptance, my friends. Christy in Brooklyn, how are you?
No, Brookline.
Brookline, Massachusetts.
Brookline,
I used to live there, Christy. How's it going?
It's going all right. Not Brooklyn.
I know. Brookline, Mass. I used to live over there off Beacon Street, right up there. Right on the Brookline, right on the Brookline Boston line, right by Park Drive, actually, by the busy B.
All right. I'm on Beacon Ave right now.
Okay. So what's on your mind?
There's an issue that I want to bring up that nobody seems to talk about, and it's when the politicians talk about marriage should be between one man and one woman.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to know how they would define that.
Okay. How they would define one man and one woman?
Yeah. Go ahead. Try to define that.
I don't know.
Would it be a penis? What about men who've lost their penises?
Right. That's a horrible tragedy.
What about women who've had hysterectomies?
Okay.
Okay, what about genetically? There's a lot of sort of mixed genetics where there's people with XXYs, XYYs.
You're saying too many male chromosomes, too many female chromosomes.
But there's people who are...
Oh, I get what you're saying. Okay. You're saying that, you know, what does it really mean? You know, what is the definition of a man? What is the definition of a woman?
Yeah, so if you're going to make a law, how are they going to enforce that law? Are they going to test you for something?
Right.
And they're marginalizing a huge segment of the population who are intersexed, who have lost parts, who don't have, you know, absorption of androgens, who look like they're females but are genetically male.
Wow.
What about people who are transsexuals who have actually had the surgery?
So
how do you create a law for that? And why aren't people stopping politicians when they say one man and one woman?
Yeah, when it's a lot broader than that. And
what is a man? What is a woman?
Yeah, well, you've got me asking myself. I have to go to the doctor now to find out.
Are they going to have to drop their pants before they get married? I mean, what?
Well, that would certainly make the ceremony more interesting.
Yeah. Does that mean that that one of the, you know, if it's two gay men, one of them's got to dress up as a woman? Is that what the law says now?
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah,
what?
Exactly.
Yeah. What?
You know, well, it's just it's all very fuzzy, and they're making it very black and white.
Or
and
not fuzzy, or not there at all, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You gave me the opportunity, and now I'm going crazy. Thank you for that call. It's a very provocative call. Thank you, Christy.
Thanks, Christy.
That is pretty interesting, because I never even, like, I did, to the point where I couldn't even quite understand what she was trying to say initially, but it's a very sort of interesting thing when you start thinking about just how broad, you know, the umbrella of sexuality, not just sexuality, but gender can be in all its different manifestations. And why isn't that, since the law is so sort of, meticulous and nuanced in terms of really exploring all these different avenues of morality and ethics, why don't they explore more what the real definition of gender is? That's a very provocative phone call there. We're going to take a few more calls. Stay on the line, 866-303-2270. This is, I'm excited. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow. Yes. Yes. I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah. Drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay. Well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're on the phone with you talking about the traitors within the government, the mutinous. Is it that mutinous, mutiny, mutinous?
Mutinous will work.
Treasonous, treasonary, no.
Treasonous.
Yeah, people, yeah. But you know who they are. You do. You know, we've got people like Senator John Cornyn, a Republican of Texas, Tom DeLay, who are using front organizations that have, crypto-fascist intent, who are now sort of putting out, you know, very thinly veiled incentives for, you know, freaks, marginalized, angry Christians to shoot judges. I'll get to that in just a second. What a nice segue for a comedy bit. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we got the machine here, the Big Eye News 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. So let's kick it up and feed it some headlines. From the New York Times, the Bushes plan to attend Pope's funeral. The Bushes plan to attend Pope's funeral. Translation, Bush panders to Catholics over Pope's dead body. Here we go. From Fox News, Gore launches TV channel. Read that in there. Gore launches TV channel. Translation, viewers prepare for Deadwood, the network. From the Associated Press, a study uses video games to fight obesity. There you go. Study uses video games to fight obesity. Translation, video gamers eagerly await release of Grand Theft Dorito. I'm sorry, wait. All right, let's get back to the calls and get back to the serious. We are talking about Senator John Cornyn making a statement, as an anti-American, anti-constitutional, proponent of judiciary activism to get Christian radicals to kill judges. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey, how do you respond?
How are you?
Good. How
hey,
are you?
Paula.
I'm doing okay. I just want to know, why isn't Homeland Security after these guys?
Good question.
I mean, how is this any different than the, you know, Osama bin Laden's greatest hits?
You're absolutely right. It's thinly veiled. It's metaphoric. It's insinuating. And they are meeting Thursday, Homeland Security. Maybe we should bring it to their attention somehow. Yeah. Okay. So that was thank you, Paula. I guess Paula decided to go ahead and hang up. But the you know that's a good question. What she's saying is true, because if you look at the language here, if you look at Senator John Cornyn, the traitor's language, what you see is he basically says, you know, I don't know if there is a cause and effect connection, but we have seen some recent episodes of courthouse violence in this country. Now, mind you, that's violence that had nothing to do with ideological incentive on behalf of the judiciary at all. It couldn't even be misunderstood as that. I mean, these were just, you know, bitter, crazy people that just wanted to take out judges or judges' family for decisions that those judges made that had nothing to do with politics. And then he goes on to say, quote, and I wonder whether there may be some connection between the perception in some quarters on some occasions where judges are making political decisions yet are unaccountable to the public, that it builds up and builds up and builds up. Why doesn't he just say, you know what I'm saying? Angry? Are you angry? You know, I mean, it's sick stuff, and this is coming from the Republicans, and this is really, you know, very not thinly veiled, you know, incentives being put out by the Republicans to kill American judges. And these are judges that, you know, don't always side. You know, the thing is that the judge that put the final decision out in the Schiavo case was a Republican appointed judge.
Judge Birch, yeah.
Judge Birch, who took a stand, you know, in support of the judiciary, of the Constitution. And these bastards are still doing what they're doing. It's pretty scary stuff. Let's talk to Steve in Asheville, North Carolina. Steve.
Hey, Mark. What's going on?
Not much.
Hey, man. Steve.
Great show, guys. But first of all, I need you to add something to your big list of anti-American, treasonous, slimy little bastards. You need to throw anti-Christian in there, too, because you guys made a call for left-wing Christians. So
yes, sir.
Basically, one thing, man, I've been a huge fan of yours since way before Short Attention Span Theater.
Wow.
Like we're talking A&E evening at the Improv when I'm like in junior high.
Thanks, buddy.
I've read Living with a Messiah Complex. I know your spiel. I know, you know, as much as I can know you without being a Psycho Stalker fan.
Okay.
So I've got to call you out.
Okay.
Basically, I know I'm not threatened as a Christian by people who believe differently than me. Matter of fact, I'm like Episcopalian. That's about as far left as you can go and not being Buddhist.
Hey, that's me too.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what I'm calling you out is, Mark, it's this, man. No matter how much you apologize, no matter how many little condescending jokes you make, if you paint all of us, and I know you're talking about a specific demographic, but if you paint all of us with the same brush as these nutbags who are ignoring the words of Christ, they ignore the teachings of the gospel just as much as Tom DeLay or just as much as the Klan who runs across the Christian organization, you're painting us with the same brush. You're doing to us what they do to us.
Okay. Okay, well, I respect that, and I respect it even more that you know me so well. So, I'm not going to get defensive, and I try to make a separation. But why don't you tell us, I try to make a separation between the Christo fascist zombie brigades and regular Christians. And I know that, you know, many liberal principles are also found in the teaching of Christ.
Oh, yeah. And see, the most disingenuous thing that and I won't say even all evangelicals, but these Christian jihadists do is hijack Christianity and make themselves spokespeople for God. I mean, that's essentially what they're doing here.
Yeah, and, you know, and the truth of the matter is that these are human, you know, these are just good, you know, humanity-based, you know, ideas. They don't have to be Christian. To treat people with a certain amount of dignity and charity and compassion and empathy is not essentially Christian. It's just good human behavior. But
yeah.
Thanks for your calls. We're going to come back with Will Eno and
James Urbaniak.
James Urbaniak, and talk about Tom Paine, the play here in New York. Very exciting. So stay with us on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's the Morning Sedition program here on Air America Radio. We're going to be talking to playwright Will Eno and actor James Urbaniak in just a second. The play is Tom Paine, based on nothing. We'll be having them in the studio momentarily. But right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now, on the phone, once again, is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a new little buddy, and his name is John Paul II.
Oh, that's very touching. So I guess you're pretty upset about the Pope's death. Am I right?
Of course, Mark. Who wouldn't be? He was so young. So young.
Yeah, he wasn't even 90. Well, Bush seemed upset, too. Am I right?
Well, that's because they were both chosen by God. That's a tight little fraternity right there. Not too many in the chosen by God club.
Okay.
You know, Bush and John Paul, two peas in a Jesus pot.
Okay.
You know what his last words were?
No, and I'm afraid
his
you're going to tell me.
His last words
yeah.
were this. George W. two terms mandate Bush. Continue my work.
Come on. Come on. No, don't
you know, John Paul chose to speak English right at the end. And since he spoke about 30 languages, that's a powerful endorsement.
Come on,
Martin. Continue my
work. Listen, buddy, that's about as phony as what Bush said about him. Listen to this. Bush said this. I quote, "Throughout the West, John Paul's witness reminded us of our obligation to build a culture of life in which the strong protect the
yes.
weak." What a crock that
yes.
is.
Yes. You know, isn't it interesting
what?
How that beautiful tribute also happens to dovetail nicely with the president's culture of life message?
What are you
it's
talking?
Like it's like they're twined.
he's
finger on the pulse.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Dude, it's more like pandering, Lawton.
All right?
Bush's poll numbers are sliding after the Schiavo fiasco. Now he's trying to align himself with the Pope as if John Paul somehow endorsed his ideas.
Well, now, why wouldn't President Bush want to align himself with the Pope? The guy had it made. He was conservative. He had all the money in the world. He had a constantly stimulated religious base of billions. He never had any snotty liberal reporters asking him questions. He held his job for life and was officially considered infallible. That's basically everything on W's Christmas list right there.
Look, dude,
that's everything
hey,
you could ever
Lawton,
want.
Lawton, the Pope was against capital punishment. All right, he's against the war in Iraq. He was against the abuses in Abu Ghraib.
He was only against the gay parts, Mark.
Right.
Come on.
Oh,
Catholics
God.
Haven't had a problem torturing Muslims since the Crusades. Mm. Little thing called the Inquisition.
Yeah, I know.
Mark, read your history.
Yes, I know.
It's all in there.
This is just one more death Bush is exploiting for his own crass political agenda. He's going to go to the funeral in Rome and make a mockery of everything the Pope stood for. Jeez, what the hell's going on? Are you all right? Are you all right? What's going on?
I'm sorry that I'm not being invited to that funeral. This is going to be the best public bereavement of the decade, and I'm going to miss
oh,
it. It's going to be grief stock.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm a great crier.
I know you are.
Everyone says so.
Okay.
Nobody cries like Lawton Smalls.
I know.
Nobody.
I know.
Seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind.
Now it's a singing. Please, stop.
And no one who would have claimed
stop. Lawton, please. No more crying and singing. We agreed to.
I love
please.
Crying and singing.
I know you do. Just stop it. Just pull it together. Okay? You all right? Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Good. All right. You okay?
Two peas in a Jesus pod, Mark. Loved him like a nymph.
All right, Lawton. Goodbye.
They go out together.
All right.
Beautiful.
I'll
God
you
loves you. Do it!
All right. That's Lawton Smalls. As you know, always, every Thursday, be Lawton Smalls. People love Lawton Smalls.
Yes,
you go
they
out
do.
And, they, you go out in the world. I was in San Francisco. People are like, what about Lawton? They think he's, you know. All right, right now, let's talk about, there are two men behind this critically acclaimed one-man off-Broadway show. It's called Tom Paine, Based on Nothing. We have in the studio right now playwright Will Eno, actor James Urbaniak. They are here. How are you, fellas?
We're pretty good.
Very good. Morning.
Okay. Now, I have seen James in many films. He did a great job as Crumb.
Thank you.
American
Splendor.
And I saw that Hartley film. That was called,
Henry Fool.
That was great.
Thank you.
That was very great. And Will, you've done several plays. This is which number of plays is this that you've written and produced?
This is just my second thing I've had produced in New York, but I've written a bunch of plays.
This is big. It's not easy to get a play up and off the ground and popular. What is it? Can you tell us what it's about?
It's about a guy It is about a human being, and he's a
little vague.
The thing is a little vague. Okay. All the descriptions would sound fairly vague and fairly mundane. But
sounds compelling. You're really selling this thing.
Well,
it's about a guy who's kind of at a low point in his life. He's kind of closed himself off from people, from friends and lovers. And the play is sort of him going through this kind of cathartic review of his life. But he's actually doing it in the theater in front of people.
Okay, is this a floating character? Is this a grounded character, a real character? Is it more like a Beckett character?
He's sort of a Beckett guy, but he's a real guy.
Okay.
He's just been sort of, for some reason, thrust onto the stage in front of an audience.
Okay.
So I think Will's idea was in the traditional one-man show, we learn about a guy's life, and the guy doesn't really sort of acknowledge the audience. You know, Mark Twain kind of comes out and says, well, I was born in 1800.
Yeah, yeah.
In this case, it's more like the guy has just been sort of thrown onto the stage. And he's kind of not sure why he's there. And he's got a kind of hostile relationship with the audience.
Now, Will, when you wrote this, is this all of this, was these are like meditations, poetic sort of rants that you just sort of broke down from your own experience or your own head feelings?
Well, first of all, I just got to say, you've been up about 5 hours longer than I have. So you have to be, I wasn't expecting the McLaughlin group. So,
And I haven't even asked him a question.
Yeah.
Will, I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
We have common friends. I wasn't assaulting you.
No, not at all. I'm making a couple jokes. I got you. I'm slow in the morning. The question was, were these various
were they,
rants?
Were they, well, I mean, were they, like, because it is a show that seems to be built on kind of a series of existential rants. Am I right to some degree?
In very, very broad terms, yeah.
Okay. Now, I guess what I was just asking is, what's the creative process in doing that? I mean, was this a character-based thing, or were you just sort of blasting away at your computer?
No, I was writing slowly and methodically and trying to, having established a couple of rules for this character and for the words, the kind of words he used and the way he uses them, was trying to proceed that way. And,
okay.
I'm not sissy, and I'm not all. I apologize if I seem to have been overly fragile, because I know it's a morning time drive show and it's supposed to be fun and light and you do your job very well. So.
Well. All right. Well, thanks for sucking the wind out of us. No. I didn't mean to come up to so we're okay. Me and
yeah,
you.
Yeah. All well, right, just the thing is that it is. It's about something, certainly, but then it just becomes something, and it is something, and it's sort of difficult to explain, but
no,
people have liked it, and people have gone to see it, and I always sound to myself kind of like a fool in trying to describe it in the ways it sometimes needs to be described. So,
good is we're gonna have James read a couple pieces from it, and then we're gonna come back and maybe we'll talk a little bit about theater and the power of theater and why you chose that medium, because a lot of people who don't live in New York or a lot of just people in general don't go to the theater. I tend to go occasionally. I always find it very moving in a very specific way, and I'd like to talk to you about that after James reads this piece. How's
all
that?
Yeah.
Great.
So this is the character's Tom Payne. He's standing. This is in the beginning of the play, and he's just talking to the audience. And he says, trust me, there are people out there who don't love you, who don't love you enough to spit on your little hopes, so as to leave you all alone, respectfully and truly alone, with your larger ones, your larger hopes, which are what? Sir, care to share your larger hopes with us? No? That's fine. I understand. Don't want to jinx anything, or have nothing to jinx, or can't feel hope, or don't like sharing. Oh, the varieties of experience. Feel free to feel anything. Religious ecstasy, anarchy, chivalry, physical things, nothing, blood, your neighbor, that stranger you married. What possibilities we all have here. Ways and means to live and die. Cancer, for example, or depression. Political intrigue, anxiety, insecurity, holes in your knowledge, spots on your lungs, total oblivion. More? Financial crisis, outer space, inner peace, shame, lust, war, me, hate, you, hate, words, love, nothing, more, migraine, you, God, the things you may be feeling, the list goes on. Then the list ends. If I were you, I'd be sick of this already.
Nice, very nice. You remind me of a guy named Mark Maron, actually.
Yeah, well, you do solo rants. You know,
I do. Yeah, I do. The play is Tom Paine, Based on Nothing. It's been running here in New York at the DR2 Theater in Manhattan in Union Square. It's going to run through until September. You can get tickets at www.telecharge.com. We'll be back with more of Will Eno and James Urbaniak after this at 44 past the hour.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
On past the hour, let's land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. We're sitting with... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yep.
We're sitting with Will Eno and James Urbaniak, and we're talking about the play Tom Paine, Based on Nothing, which Will wrote and James is the star of. We're going to hear another piece from it right now, from a bit of reading that James is going to do, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the show.
What a nice crowd. I see no difference, really. In a world filled with difference, sickening, disheartening difference, I see none between the you and the me. You all seem so wonderful, and I seem so wonderful, and so I make no distinction. I see no separation, no unbridgeable distance between us, wonderful us, or none worth remarking since the thought of you disgusts me so much. The thought of you doesn't disgust me that much. In fact, you're all so wonderful, I'd like to take you home, leave you there, and then go somewhere else. No, seriously, the truth. I don't care either way. That's not true. I do care either way. I'm the type of person you might not hear from for some time, but then suddenly one day, bang, you never hear from me again. We're all roughly this way, yeah? Roughly?
Right.
So that's intense. I mean, I can already feel like just the momentum of it sort of bouncing around in my brain and sort of engaging so many different parts of my own emotional structure.
That's part of what we try to do. I mean, what Will was saying, it's just about a guy kind of going through his own arguably mundane problems. But, you know, pretty much it's a guy, but it's all of us, basically.
Yeah, I
hear and that. It's sort of like a guy with his sort of all the thoughts that are going through his head at any given time, kind of unfiltered. It's like he's lost that filter.
Right.
So everything's just kind of coming out.
Yeah. I've lost that filter at times.
Every now and again. Now, this work was done in London for a period of time, am I right?
It was. The world premiere was at 3 o'clock in the middle of the afternoon in a sort of a tiny little gymnasium in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh Fringe. But a theater in London produced it there, and then we did it in London then. That was like last summer and fall.
Now, is there a difference in staging this in London and staging it here? I mean, logistically.
The only real difference is because the play literally takes place in the theater where it's set, it's sort of... There are variables in the three different theaters that we've been in. This is actually my favorite theater where we've done it because it's a very small, intimate 99-seat theater but has like a proper proscenium stage, which I think is important for the character. You've got the kind of formal environment of a theater, but you have the sort of intimacy of the kind of black box where we develop the play.
So you've been doing theater for years, and you've obviously been writing theater for years. A lot of people... Like, most people don't go to plays for the type of, you know, real human experience that theater has for people. I'm not going to ask you why do you think people don't go, but what is it about the theater that you find so engaging, and why is it so powerful?
Well, I think a play like this, in my experience, it's the kind of event that can only really happen in the theater. And Will is such a masterful writer that the way that he's portraying this character, this device that he's come up with, where this is a guy who's been sort of thrown in front of people.
Yeah.
We don't quite know why he's there. He doesn't know quite why he's there, but he's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could take that further and say, well, maybe that's a little metaphor for all of us walking around.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the way he portrays the character and the tension and sort of emotion that comes out of this play can only really be done as a play in front of people. This really wouldn't work if you shot it as a movie. It wouldn't quite be the same if you wrote it as a story. It's sort of purely theatrical. But the thing is, those kind of plays are few and far between. Mm-hmm. Especially these days, a lot of theater you see is just sort of adaptations of movies.
Sure.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, or old musicals. I think that's it. That what you just hit on something is that's the amazing thing about going to the theater is that you're dealing with a guy, like an organic person right there in front of you with real feelings and real sort of the possibility of mistake is there.
Exactly. And there's actually a lot of, the whole play is completely scripted and rehearsed, but there are lots of sort of accidents, quote unquote, that occur and mistakes that happen because the character is this kind of vulnerable guy who's kind of freaking out.
Yeah,
it's just that live element. A lot of people have compared the character to sort of a stand-up because he's out there in front of people sort of, delivering stuff.
Demanding that people pay attention to him.
Except he's also kind of demanding that they not pay attention to him in our case. He's kind of a passive-aggressive dude.
I don't do that to him. Well, I do that. I go back and forth with the audience, but I don't actually. I do defy them to not pay attention to me.
You know, you said something in the earlier reading where you kind of made it sound like you were speaking to someone in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what happens if they answer back?
Well, they do, often. What happens is, when I first came out especially, I ask a lot of sort of, I guess, rhetorical questions to the audience. And it's amazing how often people will actually respond. And it's just sort of suspension of disbelief. If the lights come down on the cherry orchard and come up, everyone says, well, here I am in Russia in the 19th century. In this case, the lights come up and some guy is just asking me questions. And people say, oh, there's a guy asking me questions. I'll answer. So I'll actually say, how are you? And people will say, fine. Like I'm actually, a stand-up comedian or something. And like the first couple of minutes, a lot of times people will talk back and then they stop. I think either because they realize it's a play or they figure, God, if I'm going to keep answering this guy, I'm going to get tired.
or maybe this is getting too much to be about me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, Will, I'm talking to Will Eno and James Urbaniak, and Will is the writer of the play Tom Paine, Based on Nothing. James is the performer. James said over the break that you were on the short list to win the Pulitzer for this play. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Congratulations, so absolutely.
That's an amazing thing.
It is. It is almost, it sort of moves into comical territory. It is in the newspaper. I don't know. It just seems so, it seems that this is our little show that we put together.
I mean, Will and I kind of met on the downtown scene a few years ago, and we've spent a lot of time doing plays where no one came.
Uh-huh.
And this has gotten much more attention than we ever imagined. And you have a kind of detached response to that. It's almost like it's someone else's experience.
Right. Congratulations on all the success. Thanks for being here. Tom Paine, Based on Nothing, is at the DR2 Theater in Manhattan. You can buy tickets at www.telecharge.com. Will Eno, James Urbaniak, I really appreciate you coming.
Thanks for having us.
Well, there's the facts from the Streisand compound. Here is your liberal agenda for today. Write these down. It's spring. Walk outside and loudly announce to the neighborhood, I guess it's time to put up my solar panels. 2, insert feeding tube to save the congressional filibuster. Look, it's saying I want to live. 3, complain about yesterday's Pulitzer Prizes. Why didn't Jeff Gannon get one for best expose? Huh? 4, name change, Sin City to spontaneous behavioral choices in the absence of moral absolute city. Yeah? 5, today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. You know why they're waiting to bury John Paul, right? They're harvesting his stem cells. Wake up, sheeple. We're about to be overrun by popes.
Oh, my goodness.
Will, James, congratulations and thanks for coming.
Much obliged.
Thank you.
What do you got tomorrow?
Tomorrow we're going to continue our series, What's So Special About America? Professor Nancy Ammerman will be joining us to talk about Europe and whether or not European countries are more secular than they actually are.
Cool.
All right. Have a good one, man.
You too, Riley.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.